listening to the Voice of Russia from London. I'm Tim Eckert, and today I'm in conversation with the Russian artist Sergei Pavlyenko. Pavlyenko has made a success by painting some of the most notable figures in British society. A graduate of the St. Petersburg Academy of Fine Arts, he now lives in London, and his portrait of the Queen, made in 2000, is said to be one of her personal favourites. He's painted her subsequently in the company of her grandsons, the princes William and Harry. Sergei Pavlyenko came into our studio, and I asked him why he first left Russia.
Well, I didn't actually intend to leave Russia. I just went for a trip. I went to England for 3 months, and I went to America for some time. And then I came back to England, and by that time, all these disturbances in Russia already took place. I mean, 91 revolution. So it was bad for everybody, but I would say probably especially bad for artists.
It was just economically impossible, really, to make a living as an artist in Russia at that time.
Yeah, well, it was pretty much impossible before that, but after 91, I think it became totally impossible.
You chose London, or London chose you?
First, I came here. My first place in England was Gloucestershire village. Then, because I had some friends in London, so I went to see them in London, and accidentally went into a gallery, showed my transparencies in those days. And I was given ideas and proposals, and that's how it began.
And you're what we would call a classical painter, a figurative portraitist. That's your main style of work.
I like doing portraits. And second is that I think I have a maybe special talent for portraiture.
I mean, since you've been to London, been living in Britain, you've had some quite notable commissions. How did it come about that you came to paint the Queen?
Well, I think it's again a combination of two things. One was that I think I'm a good painter. And the other thing was that when it comes to paint a portrait of, especially of somebody like Queen, of that importance, people really want likeness and a good painting. They don't want all this self-expressiveness splashed over the canvas. And that's probably why they chose me.
You're obviously not British by birth. You've been living here, though, for a long time. Did you find it a technical challenge or an emotional challenge to paint the Queen?
Technical challenge was a couple or a few. One was that it was spread over a year. So normally when I paint a portrait, it's like sittings are spread over a month. But in this case, it was every sitting was separated from another like for a few months sometimes. So this was a technical problem and emotional problem because, you know, you sort of get cooled down after a long waiting. And, of course, organizational problem, yeah, it was a bit difficult, mainly because usually when a sitter is posing, I can easily tell, oh, move this way, turn this way, chin up, chin down, you know. More difficult to do this with the Queen.
Is that more difficult because you felt yourself that you didn't feel you could ask her to move, or was there something about
Did, I did ask her to move, but if I was painting you, I would say, please, sometimes even skipping, please, just say, move a bit right, turn a bit right. But in this case, I should have said something like, Your Majesty, do you think you could possibly, you know, turn a little bit? And she said, yes, of course, and does turn, but because she was talking all the time to other people in the room.
So it was quite a formal setup, quite a formal situation.
And so naturally, her natural habit was to turn her face to the person she was talking with. So all my instructions were forgotten straight away. So this was a difficult scene. And of course, the other big difficulty was that the painting is depicting the Queen standing on the staircase, and grand staircase in Buckingham Palace. And all the sittings, they took place in the Yellow Room. That's where she always posed. Now, for me, the company who commissioned the picture, Drapers, they created a sort of imitation. Well, they created steps, which were brought to the Yellow Room. They were covered by red carpet, and they had railings so that the Queen wouldn't fall down. But it's still, the light was, because on the staircase a light falls from top, and in the yellow room it comes from side. And this was the source of difficulty, but also in the end it was kind of a source of one adventure. Because I needed really to check after all the sittings how all this looks like. Again, to see the, because first sitting was on the staircase, and then after many sitting, well, several sittings in the yellow room, I needed again to go back to the stairs. And so the queen agreed, we went to the stairs, and then they told me that I was the first artist who made the queen walk around the palace.
But she was, by all accounts, very cooperative. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you didn't find her a difficult person
not at
to
all,
deal
no.
with.
No, she was very easy, very cooperative. And in the end, when it turned out that she likes the painting very much, and we expressed the idea of possibility. We expressed this idea to the palace secretaries if it would be possible that Her Majesty unveil her painting herself. And they said, oh, no, forget about that. But then we asked her directly, and she agreed straight away.
So, I mean, looking at your list of achievements, Her Majesty the Queen, the Queen Mother, the Queen's grandsons, Harry and William. But you've also painted Prince Michael of Kent.
Michael of Kent, also King of Jordan, and also a few other people related even to English royal family. And
quite a number of dukes and lords and ladies in this country.
You know, sometimes people say, oh, you know, why, you are painting just grand. No, I'm painting anybody. I don't choose, I wouldn't say, oh, you go away because you're not the Duke. You know, I paint everybody. It's just accidental.
Let's talk a little bit about the differences, if you're happy about that, the differences between the artistic community in Russia that you left and art in England, because we hear a lot about contemporary art, and you mentioned at the start of our discussion that you're a classically trained painter. You paint portraits of people that look like the subjects, and that's become a little bit unfashionable in Britain.
It's not unfashionable among public and among artists. It's unfashionable, I would say, among art critics and institutions like Tate Modern. Sometimes. There was on the radio, I heard that a broadcast about all these new styles and painting and art. And again, the presenter said, oh, these people move boundaries of art. And in my opinion, they move not boundaries of art, but boundaries of making money. This is my opinion about majority of so-called modern art.
Particularly the modern crop of this generation of conceptual artists who are commanding fabulous figures for things which are really ideas rather than accomplished pieces.
But you see, the thing is that the major problem for figurative art is that in other fields of art, like music, for instance, it's clearly separated. Say, opera is not compared with jazz or with hip-hop. While in art, everything is in one bowl, in a way, and people are comparing performances with fine art, which is not comparable.
It's harder to get your name known by a wider public, though, isn't it, if you're a classically trained artist?
Just harder, yeah.
I mean, the big names like Damien Hirst or Tracy Emin or any of the young British artists, as they used to be, not so young anymore, they make a big media splash. You think that's very distracting to art in general?
In my opinion, yes. In my opinion, it's not helping for good art to survive. And it's not only this is a big problem, but the other big problem that what is going on around, say, good classical figurative art is that schools, they stop teaching it. And young people who even would like to do it and have a talent to do it, they simply don't have a possibility to learn it.
They're not being given the opportunity to train in the techniques of drawing.
Yeah, not only drawing, it's composition, it's very important. Even technology of oil painting.
Is that because it's not seen as something that will earn you a living? I mean, a lot of education in this country has become very vocational.
Well, this is, it's part of it. It's part of it because my theory is that there are many, many art dealers and very few good artists. But all art dealers, they want to have a lot of money. And so it's much easier to find somebody who is not particularly good, but just different, and start to promote him heavily. And after a while, the stuff this person produced becomes just a collectible item rather than an object or an object of good art.
That's art as a commodity.
Yeah, and that's why many people who are doing sort of, there's quite a lot of artists who are doing, they call it conservative, yeah, painting. they are not really accepted by institutions like Royal Academy, for instance. For them, this is old-fashioned. Well, I must say that in my opinion, there's no fashion in art. There's only quality.
Do you think that's different in Russia?
It was different, but as a result of, I would say, westernization of Russian culture, the same process taking place in Russia. Well, again, people like me, who are doing classical figurative art, we don't mind other artists like Damien Hirst, you mentioned. Oh, okay, this is art, fine. But don't, you know, put them together. So we don't mind them, they mind us. That's how it works. So,
but it must be difficult, though, as a trained figurative artist with from the classical tradition, if you like, to see people described as artists making fabulous fortunes from things that you would perhaps rate in terms of their skill levels as not so high.
Yeah, but again, I don't see it as good art. So I don't see it as that they are ahead of me in terms of income, and because they are simply not doing what I'm doing. To conclude, I would say that those so-called modern artists, I see them as totally different part of art.
Can you guess or can you imagine what would have happened to you had you stayed in Russia? Do you think you would have been able to carry on painting?
I would probably wouldn't survive even, because my character is sort of stubborn and straightforward. And in those days, it was so difficult to get in a conflict with somebody, you know, like government or gangsters or whatever it was.
And do you think it would have been impossible to make a living simply from art?
There? No. For me, no. But again, that's what we think, which it may not necessarily be true. you never know.
Are you in touch with artists who did stay behind?
Yeah. Sometimes people think that everybody who graduates from the academy is ready for a huge, very successful career. This is not quite true, because at the academy they give the means, yeah, instruments. But if you don't have your mind, your understanding of life and what you want, it's pretty much useless. And unfortunately, I would say maybe more than 50% of students of the academy, they were given excellent skills and they had very good talent in terms of drawing and feel for color and proportions and composition, but their head content was not very sort of good. And the result is that many of them either totally gave up art or just doing, I don't know, something teaching or doing. Interesting that today, in the last few years, majority of artists, successful artists who are still living in St. Petersburg, where I'm from, they work for Chinese art market.
What type of work are they producing?
Figurative, yeah. Because Chinese art school was very much based, figurative art school painting was very much based on Russian. Because many Chinese students, they came in 50s and 60s to study in Russian art schools. Then they went back and created their schools. So the result is that it's very much respected, both in terms of respect and in terms of money in China now.
Tell me a little bit about the thought processes that you go through when you're painting. You talked about the challenges of painting somebody like the Queen in quite a formal setting with a lot of people around her and her having to think about other things. How important is it for you to establish a rapport with the subject?
Well, it is very important to see the subject and to see the subject in different situations, maybe like in different light, in different outfits. So the more I know, the more I can show.
Do you need to like your subjects?
No. It's because sometimes people think that artists, they are portrait artists, they are like, I don't know, detectives or writers who sort of penetrate and can describe the person's character, I mean, who the painting very accurately. But I always say that I'm not a writer, and my description comes out in terms of my brushstrokes. I may not have exact words to describe the character, but I may have exact brushstrokes to describe the character.
You're not like a photographer. You're not trying to present 100% likeness. No. You are trying to capture the essence of the person.
The 100% likeness, it's something, it's never 100%, number one. Number two, that there is a formal likeness, and formal likeness is something when you look like you, but not quite alive, and there's no depth. So what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to put some emotions, character, and so depth, you know.
But you're deducing that depth from your
first-hand meeting,
not from what you've been told or what you've read about the person.
No, from the feelings. Well, of course, I cannot sort of separate myself from hearing things about people, like about the Queen, but so there is definitely some sort of influence on the result, but the major thing is seeing.
And generally, people like what they see. Have you had occasions when somebody said, I don't like it?
You see, my idea is that because I paint portraits, and most of the people I paint, they are, most of them, because they chose me, so they like my style, and in a way they like me, because my style is part of me, part of my character. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, we know that all of us, we look in different times of our life, and even during one day, in a different way. Smile, or concentrate, or, you know, bring your eyebrows together, or whatever. So it's for the artist to choose what expression is most suitable for the character. On the other hand, all of us, they have better sides of the character and worse sides of the character. And I always thought that what's the point of digging out something in the person which is not really nice and putting it on the canvas? It's much more pleasurable, in a way, for me to paint something nice, good, of the people. It's like in life, it's better to notice good in people than bad in people.
Do you draw the line there between looking for something good and flattery?
I don't flatter. It's just I choose the expression which is the person's expression. It's not a flattery expression. I don't do cosmetics. Like coming back to the Queen's portrait, I wouldn't feel right if she was standing smiling, you know, like Hollywood movie star wearing gutter robes and standing on Grand Staircase. It wouldn't be appropriate. So the expressions often is dictated by the idea of the portrait, by the composition, not only by, many people will say that when Queen is very much smiley, then it's better, but not always.
Do you think about how the sitter will react to the portrait while you're painting it?
I don't think about it, no. But because all the process is opened, so the sitter can see it in the progress, it's very much unlikely that if they like it, how it's progressing, and then they say, no, I don't like it.
Have you ever felt that you produced something that the sitter was not unhappy with, but perhaps thought that reflected them in a way they didn't want to be reflected?
Maybe out of 200 times I painted people, or portraits rather, portraits of people. Maybe there were a couple of cases when, not the sitter themselves, but their, I think on both occasions, there were wives. They had a slightly different idea, again, of this inner likeness rather than formal likeness. But sometimes it's not always possible. Number one, we also make mistakes. Of course, it's better when these mistakes are small. But also, it's not always possible to understand the person entirely, because some people, they masquerade when they pose.
Obviously, you've been very, very successful as a portraitist, but left alone for 6 months, what would you paint for yourself?
Well, I'm paint for myself pretty much all the time, but when I have time. Just recently I've done a couple of nudes and thinking about painting some other pictures, more compositional, like multi-group subject, because it's... I won't tell you because I don't want other artists to hear about these ideas.
With the aim of exhibiting them or not?
Yeah, yeah, if possible, of course. Because I found that when you are, say, very much accepted as a portrait painter, if you go to the galleries which are not exhibiting portraits, for them you are nobody.
Tell me about customers. Art and money makes an uncomfortable mixture very often, but we hear a lot about the big Russian community in London and a lot of wealthy Russians buying art. Have you profited from that?
I've done a few portraits, but it's more than an exception rather than the rule. And there are, again, a couple of explanations. One is that those majority of Russians who buy art in England, they buy sort of from secondary market art of 19th, 20th century, first half, yeah? Which means that they buy art as an investment, as a piece to put on the wall and to show off. And from that point of view, my art is not that kind of art. But speaking about portraits, it's also, there is a phenomenon that people, there are two things. Many of those people who come to London, they are so-called new rich people, yeah, or new Russians, as they call them in Russian. And many of them became rich sort of quickly and in some way accidentally. And so they don't come from families where there is a habit of collecting and buying art and understanding art. And so that's one of the reasons why they buy as investment. And so when they move over, they just go for this kind of art, which they acquire from auction houses mostly. That's on the one hand. On the other, these Russian people, rich Russian people who come from Russia to England, they went over a few obstacles, sometimes very big obstacles. For them, it's like a life achievement to end up with a lot of money living in London. And when they think that after all these efforts, commissioning a portrait to a Russian painter doesn't make sense.
It would be, for them, you think your Russianness would be a problem?
No, it's not a problem, but it wouldn't be understood, because what was the point of moving over from Russia and then commissioning again portrait to a Russian painter?
You paint every day?
Nearly, yeah.
What happens if something stops you painting?
I go fishing.
And you don't see a day when you would stop painting? That's your life?
No, painting process, it's not only putting the paint on the canvas with a brush. It's also sometimes coming to the studio, sitting in front of the picture in a chair and thinking, looking and thinking. Or going away from the painting for a couple of days and coming back to it. And that's also painting. So even when I fish, I paint in a way.
We've mentioned that it's hard to get publicity as a young artist. What did you make of the recent protest by the artist from the Yellowism movement who scrawled graffiti on a Rothko?
As you mentioned, it's very difficult to make your profile known to big places like Tate Modern and Royal Academy. And I had an idea of that one of the ways of doing it for figurative artists, or just for artists who is maybe for any artist, but especially for figurative artists, would be something like to bring your painting to the Tate Gallery with a nail and hammer, put it on the wall in presence of reporters. So effectively, this guy did exactly the same.
You think it's probably just a self-publicity?
Exactly, nothing else, just that.
You don't believe in the grand ideal of Yellowism? It's not a movement that you think is going to take off?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's one day. This is the first time I heard about it, Yellowism. I don't know really what's behind it. I don't exclude the possibility that one day it might develop into something new and interesting. But
what do you feel, though, about the idea of invading the integrity of somebody else's work?
I'm not a fan of Rothko. Let's put it this way. I don't see it as invasion of art. I see it more like invasion of interior. If somebody paints on the wall, you know, graffiti, that's about the same thing for me.
But you don't think there's something sacred about a piece in a gallery and it should be protected?
Of course it should be protected, because my opinion not necessarily should be shared by other people. And if I have a different opinion, it doesn't mean that other people should listen to it. So if other people like the work and they put it on the wall, they have reasons to do it, and this should be protected. And in a way, it shows how easy it is. Because you know that in Hermitage in Russia, there was a case when one crazy person, he came to Rembrandt display and damaged a lot with knife, and it took maybe 15 years to get it restored. But I'm not even sure if the end result is Rembrandt. It may be a version of it.
But you're not planning to go in and scribble on any Damien Hirst in the near future?
No. I have no plans like that. But sometimes, as I said, it's when you feel like, because the feeling is that it's unfair, very common word in England, unfair, you know, like when you see anybody richer and more successful than you in England, this is unfair. So for me, it's also in a way unfair that my kind of art is not that much accepted by museums and art critics, compared to people like Hirst or Amy.
So you do feel a slight sense of grievance?
Yeah, it's that's a natural feeling. It's and I said, that's on the one hand. On the other hand, I feel like my own conclusion, it's a waste of taxpayers' money to put this kind of art in big rooms and buy them.
And yet Hirst's retrospective at Tate Modern this year was the most successful exhibition they've ever had.
Yeah, but what is success? You know, it's showing collectible items, that's one thing. And many people go there just to say, oh, I went to Hirst exhibition, just for the sake of discussion or conversation with their friends. So
they don't know what they're looking at?
Well, I don't think so, no. But it's, they always, sometimes they say that public is stupid. I agree that often public is stupid, but here I must say that public may confuse a bad painting for a good painting, or a bad piece of art for a good piece of art, just because it was heavily promoted and things like that, and put on the wall in Tate Modern. But they will never confuse good piece of art with bad.
You've been listening to In Conversation on the Voice of Russia from London. I'm Tim Eckott, and today I've been talking to the artist Sergei Pavlyenko.